He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising back at the board. You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at SEC Media Days down in Hoover, Alabama. And, you know, we've gone from being able to wrangle some big names in college football coverage. Last segment, we just group hugged a coach and we brought him over.
And then ran through a few walls because he's just all energy right now.
Huge thanks to Coach Derek Mason for coming on and joining us last segment. But we figure, what do we do? How do you upgrade from that?
Yeah.
I don't know if you up, you get more. That's what you do, right? You just get more. So we went from one Vandy rep to two representatives of the team as Oren Burks, linebacker for the team, Ralph Webb, running back for the team. They join us live on Braden and Fitz from SEC Media Days. Guys, thanks for taking some time to join us.
Glad to be here.
So we're going to tell a lot of stories, and we're going to get to know you guys and all that good stuff. But I got to ask you, Oren, first, you just stopped and talked with the commissioner of the SEC. So Greg Sankey stops you in the middle of Media Days. What does the commissioner of the SEC say to you?
Just kind of recapping on last year, he kind of mentioned me in his opening address. So I have a pretty good relationship with him. Pretty much every time I see him, saw him down in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl, for the All Sacred Works team. So kind of every time I see him, is really good to catch up with him.
I want to, we're going to get
to a good relationship to have, by the way.
Yeah,
that's a good one to have in your back pocket. I want to ask Ralph your process, because we were just talking to Coach about this. There were people that were surprised you decided to come back. How did that process go down for you? What did you look at? How did you weigh it?
You know, I did a lot of talking with my family, a lot of praying, a lot of discussing with the coaches. Coach Mason in particular, I met with him a few times. You know, just analyzing the whole situation and see what would be best for me on the other side. And I think coming back this year will increase my draft stock, put me in a better position for this year's coming up draft, and also help my team put us in the best position to win more games this year.
And it helps to maybe put your name in the top 10 all-time SEC. That's not bad either, right? Good season. Guys, how has – you guys have been here a long time with this program, and how has the identity of the Vanderbilt Commodores football team evolved in your time, both you guys at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I think we just bought into Mason's scheme. I mean, he's a guy that's very energetic, as you guys know before. He just brings a lot of energy, and we feed off that energy. Whether it's in practice, whether it's meetings, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, he's a guy about doing the right thing and being relentless, tough, and intelligent. So just glad to have him as a coach, man. He makes things fun.
Yeah, I think the first couple of years we were a team that was trying to figure everything out. You know, we were young, very young team, and we finally bought into the process this last year, late in the season. It finally clicked for us, and the passing game came along offensively, along with the running game to help balance us out, and I think we're going to carry that over into this year.
You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're sitting down with Ralph Webb, Oren Burks. So talk a little bit, Oren. You just mentioned the defense and size, and one of the things that that Coach just talked about was the development of sort of his squad and getting the right guys developed. But let's talk about the other side of it. You've seen some development in Coach, right? Like, what's the difference in Coach today from the coach that you saw a couple of years ago?
I think with experience comes growth. And, I mean, seeing him grow as a coach has been awesome, man, because he's growing just like we are as players. So, like, for us to be growing along with him is an amazing process. He's definitely a defensive mastermind, man. He has so many things up in his head that he wants to get down as far as, like, schemes and things like that. But it's just a matter of us just buying into the schemes and really just going at it 100%. So just love playing for that guy, man.
Oren, you're very involved in the community and with not only campus life and community life in the city. Ralph, you've had a chance to go to Australia. I mean, you guys, unbelievable life experiences. How is college and just in general, how did you get involved in that, Oren? And Ralph, that decision, how did you learn from that? What did you learn from that? Two guys like that going through those experiences, how has that been a part of your life in college?
Yeah, I think Vanderbilt is very unique in that we're human beings off the field as well. So that's a huge emphasis for our athletic department, is making sure that we're involved in community service. We're getting the experience that we need to. So we actually both did the Australia trip, study abroad. So I did it this past summer. You did it 2 years ago. So he kind of inspired me to do that trip. He's like, it was a lot of fun. So we definitely take advantage of those opportunities there at Vanderbilt.
You know, yeah, that opportunity was life-changing. Just to get to see another side of the world and their culture and how they live. It's definitely something I'll always take with me until I'm able to travel again. I think Vanderbilt does a great job of providing student athletes with the same experience as a normal student would get. And because we preach 40 years, not four, and there's life after football. And so they want to make sure you get the full experience.
So did either of you guys? I've been to Australia a few times, and like Northern
Australia. I
think
that was Australia, a humble brag right
there.
No, by
no, the way. That was straight up brag. No humble. So Northern Australia, like one day I was at this petting zoo playing with a kangaroo, and then the next day we were in Southern Australia, and I was like, "What do you eat here?" And they're like, "Hey, everybody eats kangaroo." Yeah. Did you guys eat kangaroo while you were in Australia?
Yeah, I did. I definitely did.
It's not right, but you have to, right? Everybody looks at me funny.
What's the scouting report?
It's just kind of chewy. It's
a lot of muscle.
It tastes like chicken, but it's kind of like chicken, but kind of chewy.
Yeah, it's definitely.
And they're big, like they're stacked. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I look at them and I
like
felt like
kangaroo jack or something like.
It's true. I thought I was going to get my butt kicked.
D-Mace is going to put him on outside linebacker and blitz him off the edge. Oren Burks and Ralph Webb hanging out here, and all right, you know, I love the perspective angle because I think we live in a time in our country where it's. And Oren, you're big on this too. The perspective of other people is so important. See things through other people's eyes. It brings people together so much faster than you think.
Absolutely. I mean, just compassion is just the number one thing that like you said, like seeing things through other people's eyes. I mean, for me, I mean that's the most important thing. Like you just spreading love, spreading positivity. That's what makes this world a better place.
So let me ask you, Ralph. We'll start here. We've been talking a little bit this morning. Vandy's a little under the radar this year, and we feel like you guys are coming off of a good season, and it's not getting a lot of conversation. Right now, are you guys happy with that, or is it a disrespect thing? Where are you on that?
Yeah, I'm personally fine with it. You know, just like a guy like me has always been underrated, and I love being in that position to go out and prove everybody wrong. So I definitely think we're going to use that as motivation and come out and try to be 1-0 every week.
I mean,
yeah, we're used to being underrated, man. That's a fun position to be in, man, because, like, I mean, you just know you got to work that much harder to get the respect that you deserve. So, I mean, that's what we've been working for this offseason.
All right, let's get to the important stuff. Oren, you went bow tie. Ralph, no tie. Did he actually – you guys are roommates, right?
Yeah.
Did he actually tie the tie, or did he clip it on?
No, he definitely tied it. Yeah. He tied it.
100%.
You knew how to do it from the word go? Did you have to study this?
Like, a couple YouTube videos, piecing together. You work things out. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a nice little tie. I mean, I'm happy with the performance.
Got the pocket square going,
yeah,
too. It's pretty strong over here.
I mean, it's tied well. Like, I tried the YouTube video thing. I couldn't do it at all. I couldn't do it.
Ralph, give us something about both you guys each year. Give us something about the other one that the fans don't know anything about. You guys know each other on a day-to-day basis every day. Give us the Vanderbilt fans out there something that nobody knows about each one of you guys.
Well, I'm pretty sure the fans know everything about Oren. He's one of those guys who's very impact in the community. You know, he does a lot of things outside of football. You know, he's helped founded an organization on campus called Revamp. You know, he's the head of that. So he's a guy that gets it done all on and off the field.
But does he do the dishes? I mean, that's what I want. I want to know that kind of stuff. Like, who does the cleaning?
Oh.
Who does the laundry? Like, come on, guys. Come on.
Now, we're very balanced. You know, we're roommates. We keep the house clean. You know, I might go in there and get the dishes done, or he might go in there and get it done.
Exactly.
No, it's one of those. We just step up and do it when it's needed.
Yeah, whatever
needed
it takes.
Let me ask you a cliche question, okay? But then I'm going to challenge you to try not to give me a cliche answer. And I know this is tough. You got to move inside, and you got to replace Zach Cunningham. And this is where you say, hey, nobody can replace Zach Cunningham. I'm just going to take it one play at a time. I understand that. But tell me a little bit about that process. For you moving inside, what does it mean? How does it change for you what you do every day?
Yeah, so, I mean, the last three games of the year, I was actually playing inside a little bit with Zach. So, like, I think that was really important for the transition period. So just, like asking him as many questions as I can about the position because he's obviously, like, almost mastered the position. So the productivity for me is going to be a big piece coming in this year. So
I was going to say, Ralph, how do you – when you look at the defenses that you play against, obviously great SEC defenses, best ones you faced, give us a breakdown of some of those teams.
I think I faced a lot of good defenses over the years. Definitely Auburn has a really good defense. Florida always has a solid defense this year. You know, Kentucky always has a good defense. Georgia definitely has a good defense. I think every SEC team has a very good defense.
But at the same time, we've been talking about how you guys as a team have gotten bigger, stronger, faster on the defensive side of the ball. How does that help in your development when you're playing against these SEC defenses? Because a few years ago, that may not have been the case. At this point, you guys have that. I mean, I know the defense has always been good, but size and speed has gotten so much bigger. Does that change the way you play these other defenses?
You know, yeah, just having an advantage to compete with my defense every day. You know, those guys were number one in the red zone defense, I think. And those guys definitely challenge us to be better and prepare us for Saturday for whoever we're going out there to face.
Hey, Oren, when's the last time you were allowed to hit, Ralph?
Man, he's in there every once in a while. But I mean,
does he ever get you, Ralph? He ever gets you pretty good? You remember it?
Yeah, you know, we have had our battles up cup when we were freshmen. You know,
yeah,
we both have competing.
What's the music like in the locker room? Like, who controls the music and what is it?
Man, it's a range of guys. Mostly Jay Woods. He's right next to me. That's one of my guys. But he definitely likes to control the aux. Trent Sherfield hops on there every once in a while. That's a different mix of guys in the locker room.
There's like Kyle Shermer put something on you. Like, come on, dude.
Nah, we don't even let that happen.
The awesome moment you can't know on radio is they both just looked at each other like, no, we're not going to answer that. So, guys, we really appreciate your time. We appreciate we've said it before you guys came on. You guys are great representatives for this community, for this team, doing it right, man. We appreciate you guys taking some time and joining the show this morning.
Yeah, glad to be here, man.
Thank you.
We'll continue to break down some of this conversation about Vandy. But again, Oren Burks, Ralph Webb joining us this morning. And Josh Ward is going to join us up next from WNML. We will do that on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. We are down at SEC Media Days. I told you, stay woke on it. You gotta keep looking.
Julian would be so angry with you right now.
I would love for you never to say stay woke ever again.
Which is precisely why we use it all the time.
So would Julian, my wife, and about half the listening audience. And that's why I have to say stay woke.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's
in fact, we're trying to troll because we learn from you, Buck, and Julian, on how to troll.
Please tell me what stay woke means before we get any further. I'd love to hear you.
You want to stay awake on it.
Do not fall asleep.
You want to stay aware of the show. You don't want to take your eyes or ears off of what's happening at 102.5 The Game. Again, we're
keep
at
your
SEC,
head on a swivel.
We're at SEC Media Days, and it got crazy the last half an hour. So if you don't have the app, go download the app, The Game Nashville app, because you can get to the whole show there on demand. Derek Mason joined us about half an hour ago, Vanderbilt head coach, and then Oren Burks and Ralph Webb.
So much fun talking to
those
guys.
With us. Great representatives of Vanderbilt football. Great.
And yesterday, if you missed something, we basically did this next guest's job yesterday for him.
Yeah. We did, actually. We did this whole show.
Not only did we make Butch Jones, we proved that he has a cardiovascular system and a digestive tract, which means he's a real human being. We did that on our show. And then we programmed all of Knoxville Sports Talk Radio. Did we not, Josh Ward from WNML?
Yeah, you kind of made Knoxville Sports Talk Radio skirt yesterday.
Oh!
I would argue.
Yeah. Well done.
I'm so mad right now.
Oh, man, Josh.
So what was the reaction to Booger McFarland's comments with you and your audience, and how did that all play out?
Well, I think it ended up causing a lot of Tennessee fans to wonder, okay, well, then how bad could we be? Like, what is the floor for the season this year? And it actually kind of created a discussion of, okay, what does abysmal mean? Is that 5-7, 6-6, 7-5? A lot of Tennessee fans would say if they win less than 8 games, which is what they've done each of the last 2 years in the regular season, well, that's a step back. That could be abysmal to a lot of Tennessee fans. But if it gets to any point close to that, then I think a lot of Tennessee fans agree with what Booger also said, and that Tennessee could have a decision to make at the end of the season.
So last night we had the chance to talk to some more minds at college football, and part of our conversation today has been, I can find more people that think that Tennessee is going to finish fourth than first right now. And, in fact, a couple of people last night made the case for Tennessee finishing fifth in the East.
After a few drinks.
truth serum or perspective changer, I don't know, one way or the other. But my question to you is, where is Tennessee in this spectrum now that you've been able to chat with people and see?
Yeah, and I would say fourth is more likely than second. I really do think it's Georgia and Florida pick the order as the top two teams. Might not turn out that way, but in terms of likelihood, I think fourth is more likely. I hear much more discussion of Tennessee compared to Kentucky and South Carolina than Florida and Georgia heading into the season. And it shows you how different the conversation is than it was a year ago. A year ago, Tennessee was the hot team to talk about aside from Alabama in the West. It was Tennessee going to win the East. And if you had told everybody Tennessee's going to beat Florida and Georgia, then everybody's reaction is, of course, they win the East, but they also lost to South Carolina Vanderbilt, of course. So going into this season, where Tennessee is, it's trying to prove people wrong now, and it's back to where things were, not at when Butch Jones first arrived, but heading into at least the 2015 season, where it had people questioning, okay, can Tennessee really accomplish something here? And Tennessee has to prove that, but it has to prove it with a lot of key players that are gone from last year.
So we just talked to Oren Burks, and he said we like playing the underdog role. We like it when they're not like that with us. Like we would like it when we're under the radar a little bit. So we just heard from a football player saying that. So it's got to help Tennessee to not have the press clippings and all of that good stuff.
I agree with that.
But to me, I still am like the. This feels like overswinging. This feels like the pendulum swinging back with media people and people in our shoes saying that Kentucky and South Carolina are closer to Tennessee than Tennessee is to Florida and Georgia. Tennessee's roster is wildly more talented than Kentucky and South Carolina. Doesn't mean they're going to beat them. We saw that last year. To me, I feel like there's still a clear-cut top three. Do you feel that way, or do you think Tennessee is on the same tier as Kentucky and South Carolina?
Well, I think Tennessee's better or should be better than Kentucky and South Carolina. And if you ranked the rosters in the East, Tennessee is finishing nowhere lower than third. It actually could compare to Florida and Georgia, I believe. But there's more that goes into it to me. Kentucky's schedule is clearly more favorable than Tennessee's. And actually, head-to-head, Tennessee plays at Alabama and then the next week plays in Lexington against Kentucky. That's not going to be a fun trip up there. Now, Tennessee should still have the better roster. Where are they physically that week? Do they get guys beaten up playing in Tuscaloosa against Alabama? It happened last year in that game where they lost the entire offensive line. They had to burn a red shirt of an offensive lineman against Alabama because of all the guys that got hurt in the game and leading up to that. So we're a long way away from that point. But, I totally agree. I would rank Tennessee no lower than third in terms of roster and potential. Like if you said, okay, Tennessee maxes out what it's able to do this year, then Tennessee maybe could make a run at finishing in the top two. And I don't know that I'm going to say that. I wouldn't say that about Kentucky and South Carolina.
Right.
But is Tennessee going to max out everything that it can do? A lot of ifs that go into that happening.
And that's what I think is a little interesting. Now, yesterday, the other quote that seems to be blowing up the internet is Butch Jones saying last year was not a disappointment. Now, if you listen to the entirety of the answer, I think at the same time he says it was, we failed, but I don't like the word disappointment. So I don't think he's really categorizing it as not a disappointment. But when you hear that and you think about what that means, the mentality and the mindset, does that concern you somehow going into this year?
Well, I think it does concern Tennessee fans. And I think that at this point, fans are just frustrated of all the conversation that ends up involving Butch Jones and what he says. He is who he is at this point when it comes to the media, and especially on a day where Kendall Vickers, the defensive tackle representing Tennessee, says, yes, last season was a disappointment, and then the head coach says it wasn't. Then you get another back and forth that occurs. At least now Butch is willing to talk about not winning the East being a letdown, because at the moment that it happened, that's when you got into the champions of life comment. That's where that comes from, is right after the game when Tennessee found out that Florida had beaten LSU and Tennessee was not going to win the East. He made the comment that you never heard him talking about winning the East, and you never heard players talking about it, which was totally untrue. And then a couple of days later, he makes the champions of life comment. That's where that all came from. So at least now he's willing to talk about that part. But Butch is throwing out a lot of numbers that are true for the most part. He kind of messed some of them up yesterday, actually. But the back-to-back seasons in the top 25, back-to-back seasons winning 9 games, those are nice accomplishments, but they weren't everything. So to Tennessee fans that wanted to win the East, it was a disappointment, and you're not going to convince them otherwise.
Also, you're welcome, because we did that too. We definitely made Butch Jones admit things and be a human yesterday. So we are taking all of the credit for
well,
this.
And no joke, I drove down yesterday to the Winfrey here. So I had about an hour and 15 minutes to finally get things ready for the show, and somebody mentioned what he had said on your show, and I said, all right, so the first segment's taken care of. I can start planning after that. So, no joke, your show did give us something at the beginning.
But I think I think yesterday you could consider it a win for Butch, because he came off as relatively human and didn't say anything extraordinarily cliche-ish. He didn't add another bullet point to this bullet point list of weird things that he said. So I think yesterday was a win for him as far as what could have been accomplished yesterday on media day. I think it was probably a W.
I would agree with that. I mean, any headline where you have a national media member saying that they're going to be abysmal, that's not good.
Right.
But he handled that okay, and they were able to talk to each other on the SEC network, so he has that for him. And I do think there was a fear going in that there would be another slogan that would be thrown out or another hashtag that could be used to go along with five-star hearts and champions of life, and that didn't happen yesterday, which again goes back to that at this point, that's who Butch Jones is. A lot of times at media days, the coaches worry about what the players are going to say. Tennessee's in a position where it doesn't worry about what the players are going to say. It worries what the head coach is going
to
say.
Well, we never have to worry about what you're going to say. Josh Ward, follow him on Twitter, @Josh_Ward. fantastic work. It's nice to actually get to hang out with
you.
If you want to slow dance later, we're just across the hall, so that can be arranged.
Well, and we'll get into – we've got – you know, you thank you so much for joining us every week, Josh, and we've got plenty of time because I do think Tennessee's roster is way better than people think it is. I think the pendulum is swinging way too far in the other direction, and everyone like Booger, who we talked to, is just personally upset that he picked them to win the last 2 years and they didn't. That's where that comment comes from, in our opinion, and in Dari Noka's opinion. So I think the pendulum's swinging the other way. I think they're way more talented than people are giving them credit for.
I hope the media picks Kentucky or South Carolina third. I would hope that we are picked fourth because the pick doesn't actually matter.
Right.
That's what I would hope.
I will still continue to say, though, if having the best roster or the better roster was enough, they wouldn't have been in the situation they were in last year. So if they couldn't maximize their roster last year, why do I think they'll maximize it this year?
That's a good question.
It's a debate we'll continue to have throughout the summer until we get to the point where you can stop answering the question of who the quarterback's going to be.
Quentin Dorman or Jarrett Garantano, I'm sticking with one of those.
It's good.
Is the slow dance with the fans that hang out in the lobby, by the way?
No, it's in front of them just to make them all uncomfortable.
That's tomorrow, and Alabama fans will be very uncomfortable by that.
Yes, they
Nothing makes me more uncomfortable than what you all have done to the language. So
well, fantastic. Stay woke on it.
It would be a lit
it's skirt,
dance,
down,
I would
skirt
say.
Down here.
Josh Ward joining us, man. Thanks for the time today.
Thank
we appreciate
guys.
It. When we come back, Jason Kersey, SEC Country, Arkansas, will get his thoughts on all things Brett Bielema, what happened yesterday there, and what Arkansas looks like this year. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising back there doing a heck of a job. Don't forget, ESPN 102.5 The Game wants you to sign up for our $5,000 home improvement contest. You just go to thegamenashville.com and you register to win $2,500 of furniture and bedding from Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, along with your own spa valued at $2,500 from Four Winds Spa, brought to you by Atlantic Bedding and Furniture. Your style, your budget, Four Winds Spa. Relax, you've earned it. And your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can get to us on Twitter. We just tweeted the interview out. If you missed it earlier, we just tweeted our time out with Ralph Webb, with Oren Burks, and with Derek Mason. So we had a good solid 30 minutes there with not only the head coach of Vanderbilt football, but also two of the star players. I find it very interesting. And I think this is Coach Mason said something intriguing to me about Ralph Webb. When he said, hey, he's a smart guy. And we do have to remember that in this process, that he's a smart guy. So his decision to come back was not made based on emotion. It was made based on intelligence because he's a smart guy. So that was evidenced in his discussion about the process and sort of where he's going and deciding on what his draft stock looks like. I mean, these are all really intelligent takes on it. And sometimes I think what we see are guys move out of the draft emotionally, and this has obviously been the opposite for Zach.
For Ralph. And because you know, you think about running backs, and you're like, well, if you're going to be 5'7", 210, or 5'7", 199, like, you're not all of a sudden going to be, like, 6'1", next year. Like, you as a running back, you sort of are what you are. And the fewer carries you have, in theory, the better off your pro career is going to be. So, and Ralph Webb has carried the ball a lot. And again, he has a chance to be one of the all-time leading rushers in SEC history. Because he's got a chance to get to 4,000 yards pretty easily, and that puts him in some rarefied air in the SEC. So, historically, his career has a chance to be one of the best in the SEC, and it speaks to who he is and his character and his work ethic and all that stuff, toughness, because he's that small. But he is a between-the-tackles guy. Like, he runs hard, and it's fun to watch him play. So, I think it's really cool to have him as one of those guys at Vanderbilt that has a chance to be a big-time star in the record books for the SEC and for Vanderbilt. So
JD on Twitter came in earlier and said, Ralph Webb, 33-47 in total yards rushing, currently 20th, but 1,000 yards, and he will pass Bo Jackson. So just kind of –
it's pretty good.
I mean, that's pretty good.
The other guys in that category are the Herschel Walkers and Darren McFadden's and – Emmett Smith. I mean, those are some serious names that we're talking about putting him in the same category as.
Well, I think, you know, the interesting conversation for him is going to be what the future looks like, but also what his future in the NFL looks like, because he's, of course, put himself in a situation to make history, but he also did that in a very intelligent way, obviously, but he did that in a way that puts his future possibly, in some ways, in jeopardy because you never know what will happen during the course of the year. But it's also a statement to what's being built. And I think that's the interesting thing when you talk to Ralph, when you talk to Derek Mason, the head coach, not our Derek Mason, but the Vandy Derek Mason. When you talk to Ralph Webb and when you talk to Oren Burks in that process, what really stands out is the representation of Vanderbilt. And it's something that the coach talked a lot about, but it's something you could see and feel from those players, that the sales pitch of Vandy is changing. And Ralph even said the conversation here is it's about 40, not four. It's not about these 4 years. It's about life after football. It's about 40, not four. And I love that conversation, but I also love the power of that conversation when guys like Zach Cunningham are being drafted, because it says, hey, you can come to Vanderbilt and have, eat, and keep cake. You can have a little cake. You can eat a little cake. You can keep a little cake. You can have all the cakes if you come to Vanderbilt. And I think at some point that's sort of what was being messaged by them. And I think that's part of this process. I think there's a process going on for Vandy, and it's a process of positivity.
Well, and I think it sounds really cliche for us to be like, oh, it's just such great kids and great ambassadors. But, like, you can't always say that about everybody. There's a lot of kids and pro football players, more importantly, that just aren't great people. And so we talk all the time about the negative stories about this situation and this off the field issue. And like, it's fun to actually say, listen, these two kids are amazing young people that are doing things that no chance I was doing at their age, much less athletic competition on top of all of that, getting a degree. I mean, it's just awesome ambassadors for the city of Nashville. It's not cliche. It's not lip service. It's not, us just gushing over two kids that happen to be sitting here. That's not what that is. I've been around a lot of college athletes. Those were two very exceptional additions of the college athletic endeavor, and they're very, very good football players on top of all of that.
And on top of that, I think what's interesting, you mentioned especially NFL players. I don't believe that people get to the NFL and then suddenly become awful human beings.
Right.
I believe many of them get to the NFL already. They're delivered to the NFL already awful, and then they get the platform.
or they're sort of bad, and they get a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Because money makes everybody weird.
So it's interesting to see guys, especially Oren, I think really stood out as just there's for both of them. You can feel just good coming from
them. You're 40 and you can't tie a bow tie.
No. Oh, no, I can't. In fact,
I don't think I can tie a bow tie.
I tried endlessly.
I can't tie a bow tie.
I continued to try.
But hang on. Of course, now Julian has showed up and wants to say something because he can do something better than us.
Hello. I can tie a bow tie.
Thanks for showing up for the show. We're
fundamentally useless.
No, Oren Burks could tie his bow tie by himself, apparently. So.
Well, my wife came into me one night when I was trying to tie bow ties. We were going out, and she said, look, even if you get that thing tied right now, you're going to be so angry for the rest of the night. Just give up. So there's something
really,
to that.
You had that hard of a time doing it?
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
I watched two YouTube
videos. Well, not everyone's
videos.
As awesome as you, Julian.
Yeah, clearly. I found that out. So.
Yeah.
As he will continue to find out the rest of his
by
life.
By the way, I believe that Julian Council has changed his his Twitter handle at this point? Is that true?
No, it's
Buck
still
changed,
Showtime.
Buck Rising has changed his Twitter picture to a picture of Julian Council.
What do they say? Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
What does my profile picture say under it? Under the picture of Julian Council?
It does say fraud. That is fair.
It
does
says
say fraud.
And because fact, he didn't. Because we found out after the fact that the question Julian Council asked Butch Jones. He didn't actually come up with that question.
That's not true.
So total
which
fraud.
He neglected to mention to me when he called me total bragging fraud. Last night at like 8:30.
But does it matter if you get the TV time? Does it matter who wrote it? The important thing is he got the TV time. He's a TV star.
I got the credit.
That's true. Also lost in all of this is that he had to call home to mom and honey and find out how Buck was doing last night at 8:30. Like, they've got to check in. Is that demanded by Buck, or is that a you'd rule? Or which one of you demands that the other one calls him? When you guys are on the road away from each other.
Why don't you tell them what you called me when you called me this weekend? Like, what nickname did you give me?
My Arabian sunflower.
This is what I deal with. Like, people act...
Is Egypt Arabian? I don't know.
Yes, don't know. We're counting it.
Okay.
I called the guy last night because I knew when I was at the bar and I saw me on TV on SEC Network, so refer to me now as SEC Network's Julian Council.
Formerly known as Showtime's Julian Council because his laugh made it on the Predators bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was primarily featured in Showtime's Quest for a Stanley Cup. Go check it out on Showtime.com, please. I called the guy because I knew that he probably would be upset about what happened. So that's the only reason I checked in. I wasn't checking in to see how he was. I was checking in to be like, okay,
just,
hey, Buck, look,
you guys miss each other.
At.
I just, you know, I called my wife. He called his wife. You call Buck. That's how it goes.
I will say this. Later in the evening, we had the opportunity to see many of the biggest, brightest minds at the SEC Network and many of the behind-the-scenes guy. And I was standing there when Julian Council had to walk up and introduce himself. So it's difficult when you're SEC Network's Julian Council and you're still having to say, hey, man, I'm Julian. I don't know.
Let's just say that.
He told me he big-timed Dari Noka at dinner last night.
Kind of.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. No, actually, Julian did point out, because he was jumping up and down. For any of you that didn't see this last night, yesterday, during Butch Jones' press conference, the question that the country has sort of gone all in on was asked by Julian Council.
Yet I have yet to hear that question anywhere.
They replayed
the
it.
Answer
Nor
lot.
Will you.
So they replayed it last night on television, and in that moment, in the restaurant, Julian, you know, may have yelped like the schoolgirl, pulled out his TV and taken a screenshot of it.
Yeah,
about
it
5 minutes
happen.
Later, Dari was all over the screen, and Julian did lean over and he's like, "That's the have you been there? Like, act like you've been there before?" Because Dari didn't even look up. I mean, Dari's like close up, and we're sitting next to Dari, doesn't even acknowledge
yeah.
it. So,
yeah.
But you know what? I say,
well, that's because Dari's a professional.
Well, as somebody that has,
well, I am too. Let's just say, me and Peter Burns, Laura Rutledge, probably lifelong friends after last night.
Julian is somebody that has tattooed my favorite life moments on my arm. I can't really fault you. The question is, are you going to get SEC Network's Julian Council tattooed on your massive bicep?
I'm sorry, who are you again?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And everyone who's ever had a conversation with Laura Rutledge claims to be best friends with Laura Rutledge.
So
we are.
The entire country is up in arms over Butch Jones' answer. I want you to hear what he said, because what you're reading lacks context. You'll hear all of how Butch Jones answered the question and why maybe everybody's making a big deal out of something that really isn't. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Buck Rising is live at the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Braden and I, we're down at SEC Media Days. Julian Council has joined us. Kevin Kyle doing
SEC's
some fantastic
Julian
work.
Council.
I do want to give Kevin Kyle, in all seriousness, a massive shout out, because he is putting in
more work than Julian,
15-hour days here to make sure that you guys hear some fantastic coverage, because not only are we at SEC Media Days, all of our shows are, and Kevin Kyle is putting in the work on all of them. So,
by the way, more work than both of us, too, for that matter.
Oh, absolutely. We're down here because of Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and transportation was provided by Walker Chevrolet in an awesome Suburban, super comfy, fantastic ride with Wi-Fi. So had a great time driving down here as a group, and thanks to Walker Chevrolet for helping us make that happen. Thanks to all of those sponsors, because it's really what's allowed us to get you what we hope is the best SEC coverage you can get anywhere. We feel confident that we've been able to bring you perspective that you wouldn't get anywhere else. And yesterday, we got some great stuff from Booger McFarland and Dari Noka that has made national headlines, national news. Today, Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head coach, also Oren Burks, Ralph Webb, Vanderbilt star players have all stopped by, and Paul Feinbaum going to join us next hour. So the SEC Network's
Powell.
Very own Paul Feinbaum going to join us.
An actual employee of the SEC Network.
Well, he's former colleague.
Yeah. Okay.
That's true.
So
technically.
If you missed it yesterday, Butch Jones was asked a question by our very own Julian Council, a question that has made the internet explode, essentially being asked if last year is viewed as a disappointment. Now, here's what's happened. The websites around the country have taken the answer, and they've taken about the first, you know, 6 to 8 words, and they've used that as a reason to make you click on their article. So, because we do not want to be sensationalistic journalists, because we want to actually make sure that you hear the entire story, here is Butch Jones' full response to Julian Council's question yesterday on national media, on the national airwaves, of was last year a disappointment?
I don't view it as a disappointment. The way I view it is, you know, we didn't accomplish everything that we set ourselves out to. And again, our goal every year is to win a championship and compete to win a championship. So was it a disappointment? No. Did we not accomplish some of the things we set out to do? Absolutely. We have to learn from the things that went wrong that we could have done better. But I think all you have to do is look at it. It's difficult to win, and it's difficult to win championships. And I think this league really exemplifies that. But I'm still proud of the way our team responded. And I told our football team this, is the lessons you learned from last year, the resolve, the resiliency, are going to serve you for many years down the road in life. And that football team went through a lot of things. And, you know, I know we started off 5-0, and I believe our first five opponents were divisional champions. And I made a comment going towards the tail end of our season that the back half of our season would be much more challenging than the front half of our season. And everyone kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? But I knew where we're at as a program. And, you know, we were still needing that competitive depth across the board. And we had some position groups where we couldn't afford to have injuries. But again, this is a results-oriented business, and we fell short of our goals. But I don't like to use the term disappointment, because when you still look at it, it's hard to win in this conference, and only three teams have won 9 games, and the University of Tennessee is one of those.
So Julian Council absolutely hated that answer. And even as he sits here and listens to it, he holds his head dramatically in his hands.
Because he's not a dramatic person at
before,
all.
Before we react to it, Julian, why do you hate this answer so much?
He spent, 2 minutes trying to say no, last season was a disappointment, and they ended up saying yes by saying we didn't reach our goals. I don't understand what Butch is saying there. Like, you don't understand what the definition of disappointment is. Like, very clearly, winning 9 games at Tennessee when you were supposed to win the East is not a success for the university. Butch Jones, in every year up until that point, had improved his win total until last year, and only got to 9 wins because of a bowl game. So they went 8-4 in a year where you lose South Carolina, you lose to Vanderbilt, and that's not a disappointment. You lost to one of your rivals, and you lost to a South Carolina team coached by Will Muschamp.
But he did say it was – he just didn't use the word disappointment.
I understand. Okay, fine. You didn't use the word. But
he clearly admitted that it wasn't
what
he wanted.
Yes, you admitted it in your whole thing. And then when you have Kendall Vickers, one of your senior leaders who's here, and he's up there in the radio TV room, and someone's asking him, was last season disappointment? He says yes. How does that happen? Like, how can you have one of your players say last season disappointment, but you're sitting here and saying it's not?
Why is it a big deal?
It's a big deal to me because your players will admit it, but you as the head coach who leads the program won't.
Here, I want you to hear what Kendall Vickers had to say. He answered that same question. Buck, do you have that ready where we could play that?
Give me 1 second. I'll pull it up.
Here's what my response is. He did admit that it was a disappointment to me. Just because he doesn't like to use that word, like, I don't care. It's just semantics. That doesn't bother me. He admitted that they failed to reach their goals, and that right there alone is a step in the right direction for Butch Jones.
Sure.
And we can argue that that's a problem with him, and we all agree that that's been the problem with him. But for him to just come out and say, hey, listen, I just don't like to use that word, but this is not good enough for us. That's what he said, and Tennessee fans needed to hear that. Did he use the words you wanted to use? No, he didn't, but that's not –
no,
who cares about the semantics of it?
Like, Tennessee fans need to hear Butch Jones say, yes, we're the University of Tennessee. We should not be a 9-win team. We should have won the East. We should have won 10-plus games last year, and we should have played in a New Year's Six Bowl, if not potentially competed for the playoff. That's what they needed to hear. He said, what I've done at this point was great up until last year, where we failed to meet expectations because we're the University of Tennessee, and no longer should we sit here and accept being a 9-win team in the SEC East when Georgia wasn't good last year and when Florida hasn't had a quarterback for the last 2 years. That's unacceptable. And Tennessee fans, they understand that. Butch Jones
needs
to sit here.
Coach is never going to say that.
Well, he needs to say that, though.
No, like, coach, though.
We talk about we want Butch to be human. We need Butch to stop, cut the cliches, and sit here and actually tell the truth and be real.
See, and I heard, and I
when
did.
When you have Vickers saying that, and he's not, it's ridiculous.
Well, I hear some of that. And like Coach O yesterday, if you compare him to Coach O, I thought Coach O was awful. I thought Coach O was awful yesterday because not only did he just read his depth chart, and then cliche every single answer. He did not say a single thing about anything yesterday, Coach O. So I think Butch Jones was actually giving better answers than the guy we anticipated being more entertaining, because Coach O literally said nothing in like an hour in that room. So I get your point, Julian, that and we argue about this, Fitzy, at the beginning of the show. He said, hey, what could he have said? He could have said, yes. There's really not a good answer to the question, but he did admit that it wasn't a success. He did admit that it wasn't what their goals were supposed to be. He did admit all of those things.
By accident.
Did he do it in coach speak terms like every other coach in the history of the planet? Yes, he did. But
sure.
That's how every other coach talks, except for Mike Leach at Washington State. He's the only one.
I'll say two things to that. One, what Coach O did or didn't do, insignificant to me, because, again, it's like the argument of, is the SEC down? Well, all of college football is down. Don't care. The question here is just Butch Jones. And the other side of it is, Coach O didn't walk in with sort of preconceived notions on what he was going to say. At some point, what do I always say? Perception's reality. So obviously there's a perception battle that Butch Jones has created in his, on his,
no
because
question.
Of himself.
Yeah.
And so it changes the way his answers are going to be viewed. He's got to be aware of that, and there's some level of awareness. Now, what I didn't like about the response is that I thought it was too qualified. What I want is just a coach to come out and say...
Giving excuses. He was giving excuses.
Yeah, I felt like on the one hand, he's like, hey, you know, you learn a lot. But the fact is, winning in the SEC is hard. And then he comes in and says, we didn't accomplish our goals. But, hey, we won 9 games. I feel like it was so qualified in almost like compliment sandwich way that it was like he was afraid to just come out and flat out say, you know what? No, we stunk.
And unfortunately, and this is my point about other coaches, unfortunately, that's where we are in the media and in the industry and in the coaching ranks. Other than a handful of guys who are just flat out brutally honest, like I said, Mike Leach, maybe Brett Bielema fall in that category. Steve Spurrier would have been in that category. Like, with the except, I mean, Nick Saban says all of the exact same things. Nick Saban makes excuses for his players getting in trouble and being arrested. I mean, all these coaches do this. Every single one of them does it. That you're right that Tennessee and Butch Jones has its own unique circumstance that they're dealing with in that confine of that discussion. I agree with you on that. That he's battling. The problem is that yesterday, Butch Jones had his best ever television appearance on as far as a broadcaster with Darian Booger, because he actually went head on with the discussion that, by the way, we created. And then he won that conversation. Then he went onto the podium and didn't use any cliches, didn't add to any of his bullet points, and answered a question by saying, yeah, we didn't reach our goals yesterday. That's a step in the right direction.
Do you honestly think that if the coach of Florida, the coach of Georgia, the coach of LSU, the coach of Auburn, the coach of Alabama, and we consistently, you especially, consistently argue that Tennessee is in that same category.
Yep.
So do you agree that if any of those 5 coaches were coming off of an 8-win regular season and came out and said it wasn't a disappointment, their respective fan base would explode?
They would feel the same way. I'm so sick and tired of us sitting here being like, oh, he won the SEC Network interview. He won the press conference, all this BS. Win games. Stop giving us the whole runaround.
It's June.
I understand.
It's July.
I understand, but like,
but there's no games, we're
always talking about these kind of things, like, oh, well, Butch, don't do this. Like, make sure you do these things, kind of things. How about we focus on, hey, Butch, you're at Tennessee. Let's actually win games.
Well, he's gonna get fired if he doesn't win games. So your point is totally valid, but and true. But we're in July.
Like,
I'm
tired of like trying to defend the guy. Be like, yeah, he's a great guy. He does all the cliches. Blah blah blah. No, Butch, just come out here, give us a straight talk, and go out and win games this fall.
So like, you mean I'm to tell me you're it. Taking the easiest possible position, Julian? Good job out of you.
I will say this. Any high-level program in the SEC where their coach came out and said winning 9 games, including a bowl game, is not a disappointment, that respective fan base would blow up. So I can't fault Vols fans. Either they don't belong in that conversation and they should be okay with it, or they belong in the conversation with those programs.
I agree with what you're saying. I think you then need to go back and listen to every press conference Kirby Smart's had since having a bad season, every press conference Jim McElwain's had, with the exception of Saban, they all could say that last year was a disappointment, and it may be true for some of them, for most of them, and the fans certainly feel it's always disappointing. But the fans have unreasonable expectations. The point is it's July, and Julian is completely correct. He's got to go out and win football games. That can't happen today or next week or next month. He's got to go prove it this year on the field, and we all know that. That goes without saying. So we don't need to hear that anymore. What we need to hear from him is not screwing up, and he didn't screw up. And not only did he not screw up, he showed a little bit of humanity, and that's all we asked for yesterday was show us a little bit of self-awareness. He showed us a little bit of self-awareness, and he didn't say anything stupid. That's all that could have happened yesterday. Nothing else could have happened yesterday.
Mike Hugenin from Gridiron now going to join us up next. We'll get Hugenin's thoughts on all things SEC, all things Vols, all things Vandy. We'll do all of that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.